Okay, here we go again. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we're starting a new paper, paper 171 on the way to Jerusalem, and that starts on page 1867 with the original book, or 1701 on the rest of them. All right, let's try this again. Diane, would you let's.
Paper 171, On the Way to Jerusalem. The day after the more memorable sermon on the kingdom of heaven, Jesus announced that on the following day, he and the apostles would depart for the fast of Passover at Jerusalem, visiting numerous cities in southern Perea on the way.
You're muted, Roger.
Okay, give me one second. I can't see the restream. I'm just going to have to go forward. Okay, so after the sermon on the kingdom of heaven, Jesus announced that he was going with his apostles to Jerusalem, and this was to be his final trip to Jerusalem, right? And they're going to stop along a few cities along the way. This is a map of that. You can look at this. This is all his visits during this trip. All right. And wait, it's got me all mixed up here. Letch, would you take the next one, please?
Sure. The address on the kingdom and the announcement that he was going to the Passover set all his followers to thinking that he was going up to Jerusalem to inaugurate the temporal kingdom of Jewish supremacy. No matter what Jesus said about the non-material character of the kingdom, he could not wholly remove from the minds of his Jewish hearers the idea that the Messiah was to establish some kind of nationalistic government with headquarters at Jerusalem.
And that's true even today, isn't it? People
Yeah,
still believe that
still.
Jesus is going to come back and set up this world government, which he will be ahead of. And they don't realize he's got 10 million planets, so he's not going to stick around and run our little planet. That's just not going to happen. All right. Okay. He couldn't get him out of the mindset of the Jewish kingdom either. Gary, would you take the next one?
What Jesus said in his Sabbath sermon only tended to confuse the majority of his followers. Very few were enlightened by the master's discourse. The teachers understood something of his teachings regarding the inner kingdom, the kingdom of heaven within you, but they also knew that he had spoken about another and future kingdom, and it was this kingdom they believed he was now going up to Jerusalem to establish. When they were disappointed in this expectation, when he was rejected by the Jews, and later on, when Jerusalem was literally destroyed, they still clung to this hope, sincerely believing that the Master would soon return to the world in great power and majestic glory to establish the promised kingdom.
Now, I want to stick something in here for y'all too. Don't you think many times when Jesus talked about Jerusalem, not Jerusalem, that they got confused about this because the name is so much like that, right? Jerusalem being our system capital and Jerusalem being the capital of the Jewish world, right? So it definitely because of confusion. It confused me when I first started reading the book, right? I thought, well, maybe this was a typo. They're talking about Jerusalem, but they weren't. They were talking about Jerusalem, the system capital. Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
Yes. It was on the Sunday afternoon that Salome, the mother of James and John Zebedee, came to see Jesus with her two apostle
sons, and in the manner of approaching an oriental potentate, sought to have Jesus promise in advance to grant whatever request she might make. But the master would not promise. Instead, he asked her, "What do you want me to do for you?" Then answered Salome, "Master, now that you are going up to Jerusalem to establish the kingdom, I would ask you in advance to promise me that these my sons shall have honor with you, the one to sit on your right hand and the other to sit on your left hand in your kingdom."
You think this is a little bold?
Yeah.
Not very much.
Yeah, definitely, right?
What does it take for them to get the message?
Yeah, really.
Good example of the material-minded people then.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take this one. When Jesus heard Salome's request, he said, "Woman, you know not what you ask." And then, looking straight into the eyes of the two honor-seeking apostles, he said, "Because I have long known and loved you, because I have lived in your mother's house, because Andrew has assigned you to be with me at all times, therefore do you permit your mother to come to me secretly, making this unseemly request? But let me ask you, are you able to drink the cup I am about to drink?" And without a moment of thought, James and John answered, "Yes, Master, we're able." Said Jesus, "I am saddened that you know not why we go to Jerusalem. I am grieved that you understand not the nature of the kingdom. I am disappointed that you bring your mother to make this request of me. But I know you love me in your hearts. Therefore, I declare that you shall indeed drink the cup of my bitterness and share in my humiliation. But to sit on my right hand and my left hand is not mine to give. Such honors are reserved for those who have been designated by my father." So he's basically saying they're trying to drink the cup of the crucifixion with him, isn't he? And if they knew what was coming, they wouldn't even inkling have any inkling of doing that. That didn't take the next.
By this time, someone had carried word of this conference to Peter and the other apostles, and they were highly indignant that James and John would seek to be preferred before them, and that they would secretly go with their mother to make such a request. When they fell to arguing among themselves, Jesus called them all together and said, "You well understand how the rulers of the sense of the I can't see Gentiles lord it over their subjects, and how those who are great exercise authorities. But it shall not be so by the in the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever would be great among you, let him first become your servant. He who would be first in the kingdom, let him become." Excuse me. "Let him become your minister. I declare to you that the Son of Man came not to be minister. To be minister. I'm sorry. I mean, I can't read it though. Okay. Son of Man came not to be ministered to, but to minister. And I now go up to Jerusalem to lay down my life in the doing of the Father's will, and in service to my brethren." When the apostles heard these words, they withdrew by themselves to pray that evening in response to the labors of Peter, James, and John, made suitable apologies to the ten and were restored to the good graces of their brethren.
Can I ask a question?
It actually required an apology to straighten this out. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
Can you go back one?
Yeah.
A little bit too far? Okay. And now I go to Jerusalem to lay down my life in the doing of my Father's will. I understand that he's got to die to experience the earthly stuff.
Right.
And in the service of my brethren. Can you explain that?
In the service of my brethren, is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
In other words, he came to show the way of eternal life to all mankind, and that was the service to his brother.
And Roger?
Yeah.
I think he might also be referring to the fact that once he passed away from this material world, he would be able to send the Spirit of Truth.
Exactly.
And that is a service for us.
Yeah, for everyone from here on out for the rest of eternity, right? Just read, dear. I'll read next. And asking for places. Did I just read right before you? I did. Fletch, would you take the next one?
Okay. And asking for places on the right hand and on the left hand of Jesus at Jerusalem, the sons of Zebedee little realized that in less than 1 month, their beloved teacher, who would be hanging on a Roman cross with the dying thief on one side and another transgressor on the other side, and their mother, who was present at the crucifixion, well remembered the foolish request she had made of Jesus at Pella regarding the honor she so unwisely sought for her apostle sons.
Yeah, that'd been a different story if the sons of Zebedee were laying on the left or hanging on the left and right of Jesus.
Sure.
All right, Gary, would you take the next?
Okay. Number one, the departure from Pella. On the forenoon of Monday, March 13th, Jesus and his 12 apostles took final leave of the Pella encampment, starting south on their tour of the cities of southern Perea, where Abner's associates were at work. They spent more than 2 weeks visiting among the 70 and then went directly to Jerusalem for the Passover.
Well, he made one more stop to see Abner, didn't he? In the 70.
Yeah, the 70, that's the women's corps, isn't it?
No, that's the 70 evangelists that he trained. Okay. So, and the women's corps accompanied them quite often. All right. Rodney.
When the master left Pella, the disciples encamped with the apostles, about 1,000 in number, followed after him. About one half of this group left him at the Jordan Ford on the road to Jericho when they learned he was going over to Heshbon. And after he had preached the sermon on counting the cost, they went on up to Jerusalem, while the other half followed him for 2 weeks, visiting the towns in southern Perea.
So they were making their last trip in. And what, before I forget, Rodney, you need to take something and clean your lens on your camera, because you got some streaks going up and down for some reason. I took care of it.
Great.
All right. Let's see here. Diane, next.
I mean, I can't hear anything.
What do you say?
I can't hear anything because of the three answers.
You want to read it? Okay. All right. So, I'll read it. When the master left Pella, the disciples encamped with the apostles, about 1,000 in number, following after him. About one half of this group left him at the Jordan ford on the road to Jericho when they learned he was going over to Heshbon.
We just read that.
Yep, oh, I did.
I'm sorry, y'all. I'm going crazy today. Too much movement. And my mother's in the hospital, and I'm trying to get her into care. It's just been a crazy day. In a general way, most of the Jesus' immediate followers understood that the camp Capella had been abandoned, but they really thought this indicated that their master at last intended to go to Jerusalem to lay claim to David's throne. And a large majority of the followers never were able to grasp any other concept of the kingdom of heaven. No matter what he taught them, they would not give up this Jewish idea of the kingdom. They really held on to that, didn't they? All right, Letch, would you take the next one?
Okay. Acting on the instructions of the apostle Andrew, David Zebedee closed the visitors' camp at Pella on Wednesday, March 15th. At this time, almost 4,000 visitors were in residence, and this does not include the 1,000 and more persons who sojourned with the apostles at what was known as the teachers' camp, and who went south with Jesus and the 12. Much as David disliked to do it, he sold the entire equipment to numerous buyers and proceeded with the funds to Jerusalem, subsequently turning the money over to Judas Iscariot.
So he was carrying quite a bit of money at this point, wasn't he?
Oh, Lord.
Right before the he betrayed Jesus. Gary, would you take the next one?
Yes. David was present in Jerusalem during the tragic last week, taking his mother back with him to Bethsaida after the crucifixion. While awaiting Jesus and apostles, David stopped with Lazarus at Bethany and became tremendously agitated by the manner in which the Pharisees had begun to persecute and harass him since his resurrection.
Yeah, Lazarus was resurrected.
No, okay, I'm just confusing the two, sorry.
Yeah.
Andrew had directed David to discontinue the messenger service, and this was construed by all as an indication of the early establishment of the kingdom of Jerusalem. David found himself without a job, and he had about decided to become the self-appointed defender of Lazarus when presently the object of his indignation, solicitude, fled in haste to Philadelphia. Accordingly, sometime after the resurrection and also after the death of his mother, David betook himself to Philadelphia, having first assisted Martha and Mary in disposing of their real estate, and there, in association with Abner and Lazarus, he spent the remainder of his life, becoming the financial overseer of all those large interests of the kingdom, which had their center at Philadelphia during the lifetime of Abner.
What a tragedy that didn't keep going, right?
Yeah.
All right. Rodney, would you take the next?
Within a short time after the destruction of Jerusalem, Antioch became the headquarters of Pauline Christianity, while Philadelphia remained the center of the Abnerian kingdom of heaven. From Antioch, the Pauline version of the teachings of Jesus and about Jesus spread to all the Western world. From Philadelphia, the missionaries of the Abnerian version of the kingdom of heaven spread throughout Mesopotamia and Arabia until the later times, when these uncompromising emissaries of the teachings of Jesus were overwhelmed by the sunrise of Islam.
So Islam literally walked all over Christianity to a period of time.
It's
so,
still doing it.
yeah, still doing it. If there's a couple maps out there, I don't know if I still have them on our website or not. It has a map of the spread of Islam across the world, and believe it or not, there's more Islam followers than there are Christians.
I wonder when that started.
Long ago,
around 800
years ago. So, okay. You want to read?
I can't hear.
Either.
You can't hear anything?
No. I can't hear. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, this is all blocked through.
Is it just the fans, or you just can't hear anything through the computer?
I can't hear anything.
Can y'all give me a second? Let me turn up her volume.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
Fine, is that better?
Yeah.
If you can do that force there out through
two on count.
You're muted, Diane.
Sorry, mattresses. Let's, okay. Two, on counting the cost, when Jesus and the company of almost 1,000 followers arrived at the Bethany ford of the Jordan, sometimes called Bethabara, his disciples began to realize that he was not going directly to Jerusalem. While they hesitated and debated among themselves, Jesus climbed upon a huge stone and delivered that discourse which has become known as the counting of the cost. The master said,
"Excellent, Jesus."
A huge stone, and this is what he said: "You who would follow after me from this time on must be willing to pay the price of wholehearted dedication to the doing of my Father's will. If you would be my disciples, you must be willing to forsake father, mother, wife, children, brothers, and sisters. If any of you would now be my disciple, you must be willing to give up even your life, just as the Son of Man is about to offer up his life for the completion of the mission of doing the Father's will on the earth in the flesh." Now, if you're watching this at home on this video, I know the voice does not match my picture. This is an ongoing problem with my computer. And rather than just stop, I'm going to keep going. So just close your eyes, don't look at me, and listen to what I say. That's the best I can do. Because I don't want to keep stopping the meeting to fix this. I've done it over and over. It's a Zoom problem somehow.
Yeah.
All right. Gary, would you take the next one?
Okay. If you are not willing to pay the full price, you can hardly be my disciple. Before you go further, you should each sit down and count the cost of being my disciple. Which one of you would undertake to build a watchtower on your lands without first sitting down to count up the cost to see whether you had money enough to complete it? If you fail this, thus, to reckon the cost after you have laid the foundation, you may discover that you are unable to finish. that which you have begun, and therefore will all your neighbors mock you, saying, Behold, this man began to build, but was unable to finish his work. Again, what king, when he prepares to make war upon another king, does not first sit down and take counsel as to whether he will be able with 10,000 men to meet him who comes against him with 20,000. If the king cannot afford to meet his enemy because he is unprepared, he sends an embassy to this other king, even when he is yet a great way off, asking for terms of peace.
So it's a pep talk.
I think he's trying to get him to think deeply.
That it's serious.
Mm-hmm. Give me 1 second, y'all. I'm trying to swap this around so I can fix this. Test. Sorry, y'all. I'm having all this. You don't have to get rid of this back and swap it. Okay, am I back?
My bad. Yeah, but you're heckling. Perhaps Diane needs to mute.
Give me a second. Diane, mute. Would you mute? Okay. If my sound comes through at all, it's not aligned. But it's at least the sound's coming back through. I am so apologetic to the listeners out there. I have pulled my hair out trying to figure out what the issue with this Macintosh is. Even rebuilt the machine, so I'm not sure. I don't know if it's a Macintosh or Zoom that it won't line up. So as soon as one other person comes on the meeting, it's like my voice goes crazy. So not sure. So let's go on. What is Jesus talking about counting the cost here?
The commitment,
that's exactly right. And the commitment he had to go through to go to the cross and everything. And the people, what he's trying to explain to everyone is that this, many of the people during his time is going to pay the same cost that he did by doing the will of God. You know, that's all there is to it. There's no way around it. So if you follow him, you have to make those choices, right? All right. Rodney, I think you're up.
Okay. Thank Pamela.
Hey.
Hey, Pamela. So now then, must each of you sit down and count the cost of being my disciple? From now on, you will not be able to follow after us, listening to the teaching and beholding the works. You will be required to face bitter persecutions and to bear witness for this gospel in the face of crushing disappointment. If you are willing to renounce all that you are and to dedicate all that you have, then are you unworthy to be my disciple? If you have already conquered yourself within your own heart, you need not have fear of that outward victory which you must presently gain when the Son of Man is rejected by the chief priest and the Sadducees and is given into the hands of mocking unbelievers.
You know, this shows us that Jesus was 100% aware of what was fixing to happen to him, right? and 100% aware of the fact that he was going to be crucified. And
I wonder if he learned that on Mount Hermon.
probably so. He probably knew it innately long before that, really, think about it.
What I don't understand is why didn't he choose, and I think he probably had that option, a less ungastly death. I mean,
Well,
crucifixion is terrible.
I think it's because it was like a big exclamation point. It was dramatic.
Yeah. You're probably right. It was pretty dramatic if you think about it, right? Well, this is really weird. This one is.
We just read that. We
No, I
just read
just.
that, Roger.
Let's go. Yeah, let's go on. Pam, would you like to take this one?
Sure. Now, should you examine yourself to find out your motive for being my disciple? If you seek honor and glory, if you are worldly minded, you are like the salt when it has lost its savor. And when that which is valued for its saltiness has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? Such a condiment is useless. It is fit only to be cast out among the refuse. Now, have I warned you to turn back to your homes in peace if you are not willing to drink with me the cup which is being prepared? Again and again have I told you that my kingdom is not of this world, but you will not believe me. He who has ears to hear, let him hear what I say.
He has tried over and over and over again to convince.
Well,
What's going on there? Oh.
he's trying to tell him it's the spiritual world.
That's right. And he's tried over and over and over again to explain to him what's going on, right? Let me try this, Jim. Turn this mic back on. Turn this mic off.
Okay, can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me say something and see if my picture comes back on. It does not, does it?
Your voice has been screwed
I
up.
see your picture and I see your voice. You've got two pictures.
Yeah, the one picture
Yeah.
is fine.
All right, let me turn that back off. Turn this back on. I've been
Experimenting with this all night trying to get it
There,
straightened
that
out.
sounds better.
That sounds good right there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
okay.
Okay.
All right, so he keeps warning him of this terrible thing that's coming, but no one seems to catch it and listen to what's going to happen, right? All right. Okay, here we go. Who's up next?
I
I'm not
think
going to
you are.
read. I'm going to let Letch read in my place too.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Immediately after speaking these words, Jesus, leading the 12, started off on the way to Heshbon, followed by about 500. After a brief delay, the other half of the multitude went on up to Jerusalem. His apostles, together with the leading disciples, thought much about these words, but still, they clung to the belief that after the brief period of adversity and trial, the kingdom would certainly be set up somewhere in accordance with their long cherished hopes.
So hung on to the fact that they thought this kingdom would be of this world, right? They
The
just
bitter end.
wouldn't let go. All right. Gary, would you take the next?
Yes. Three, at Perea, I can't see what that
The
tour.
Berean
Tour.
tour.
Okay. For more than 2 weeks, Jesus and the 12, followed by a crowd of several hundred disciples, journeyed about in southern Perea, visiting all of the towns wherein the 70 labored. Many Gentiles lived in the region, and since few were going up to the Passover feast at Jerusalem, the messengers of the kingdom went right on with their work of teaching and preaching.
All right. I totally disrupted this whole meeting by trying to get my sound straight out here. Okay, so they all they the messengers went on teaching during this period of time, even though they're all on their way to Jerusalem, thinking that Jesus was going to set up the kingdom. All right. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. Jesus met Abner at Heshbon, and Andrew directed that the labors of the 70 should not be interrupted by the Passover feast. Jesus advised that the messengers should go forward with their work in complete disregard of what was about to happen at Jerusalem. He also counseled Abner to permit the women's corps, at least such as desired, to go to Jerusalem for the Passover. And this was the last time Abner ever saw Jesus in the flesh. His farewell to Abner was, "My son, I know you will be true to the kingdom, and I pray the Father to grant you wisdom, that you may love and understand your brethren."
So Abner did just that, right? He stuck right with his plans. All right. Diane can't read because she can't hear. I'm really having video and audio problems, y'all. Pam, would you take the next one?
Sure. As they traveled from city to city, large numbers of their followers deserted to go on to Jerusalem, so that by the time Jesus started for the Passover, the number of those who followed along with him day by day had dwindled to less than 200.
Isn't it interesting? They had thousands of people following them before, and it dwindled down to less than 200. Isn't that strange? All right, let me take this paragraph. It's not too bad. My voice won't match my video, but y'all bear with me. The apostles understood that Jesus was going to Jerusalem for the Passover. They knew that the Sanhedrin had broadcast a message to all Jerusalem that he had been condemned to die, and direct that anyone knowing his whereabouts should inform the Sanhedrin. And yet, despite of all this, they were not so alarmed as they had been when he announced to them in Philadelphia that he was going to Bethany to see Lazarus. This change of attitude, from that of intense fear to the state of hushed expectancy, was mostly because of Lazarus's resurrection. They had reached the conclusion that Jesus might, in an emergency, assert his divine power and put shame to his enemies. They shamed themselves, didn't they? This hope, coupled with their more profound and mature faith in the spiritual supremacy over their master, accounted for the outward courage displayed by the immediate followers who were now made ready to follow him into Jerusalem in the very face of the open declaration of the Sanhedrin that he must die. So they went in fearlessly, didn't they? Let's, would you take the next one?
Yeah. The majority of the apostles and many of his inner disciples did not believe it possible for Jesus to die. They, believing that he was the resurrection and the life, regarded him as immortal and already triumphant over death.
So they didn't think he could die, right? Basically.
Superman.
Yeah. Rodney, did you take the next one?
Yes, four. Teaching at Livius. On Wednesday evening, March 29th, Jesus and his followers encamped at Livius on their way to Jerusalem. After having completed their tour of the cities of southern Perea, it was during this night at Livius that Simon Zealots and Simon Peter, having conspired to have delivered into their hands at this place more than 100 swords, received and distributed these arms to all who would accept them and wear them concealed beneath their cloaks. Simon Peter was still wearing his sword on the night of the master's betrayal in the garden.
So they thought there was going to be a fight, right? And they wanted to be prepared. All right. Pam, would you take the links?
Sure. Early on Thursday morning, before the others were awake, Jesus called Andrew and said, "Awaken your brethren. I have something to say to them." Jesus knew about the swords and which of his apostles had received and were wearing these weapons, but he never disclosed to them that he knew such things. When Andrew had aroused his associates and they had assembled off by themselves, Jesus said, "My children, you have been with me a long while, and I have taught you much that is needed or needful for this time, but I would now warn you not to put your trust in the uncertainties of the flesh, nor in the frailties of man's defense against the trials and testing which he ahead
of us.
Which lie ahead of us.
which lie ahead of us. I have called you apart here by yourselves that I may once more plainly tell you that we are going up to Jerusalem, where you know the Son of Man has already been condemned to death. Again, am I telling you that the Son of Man will be delivered into the hands of the chief priests and the religious rulers, that they will condemn him and then deliver him into the hands of the Gentiles? And so will they mock the Son of Man, even spit upon him and scourge him, and they will deliver him up to death. And when they kill the Son of Man, be not dismayed, for I declare that on the third day he shall rise. Take heed to yourselves and remember that I have forewarned you."
So he told them just as plain as he possibly could.
Roger.
Yeah.
If you could go back.
Please. Oh, yeah, sure.
I find it really interesting because it almost sounds like Michael is talking.
Yeah, instead of Jesus, it does,
doesn't
it? It's
a third person talking. He's talking about this Son of Man.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is. Back to me, I guess. Y'all don't look at my face, just listen. Again, were the apostles amazed, stunned, but they could not bring themselves to regard his words as literal. They could not comprehend that the master meant just what he said. They were so blinded by their persistent belief in the temporal kingdom of earth with headquarters at Jerusalem that they simply would not permit themselves to accept Jesus' words as literal. They pondered all that day as to the master could mean, as what the master could mean by such strange pronouncements. But none of them dared to ask him a question concerning these statements, not until after his death. Did these bewildered apostles wake up to the realization that the master had spoken to them plainly and directly in anticipation of the crucifixion. So he was as plain as he could possibly do. Did you hear anything?
I heard that.
All right. Letch, would you take the next?
Okay. It was here at Livius, just after breakfast, that certain friendly Pharisees came to Jesus and said, "Flee in haste from these parts, for Herod, just as he sought John, now seeks to kill you. He fears an uprising of the people and has decided to kill you. We bring you this warning that you may escape."
All right, so they tried to warn him of what was coming so he could get away, but Jesus had already made his mind up that he was going in. Rodney, did you take the next one?
And this was partly true. The resurrection of Lazarus frightened and alarmed Herod. And knowing that the Sanhedrin had dared to condemn Jesus, even in advance of a trial, Herod made up his mind either to kill Jesus or to drive him out of his domains. He really desired to do the latter, since he so feared him that he hoped he would not be compelled to execute him.
Yeah, he didn't want to do that after John, right? Right. Pam.
When Jesus heard what the Pharisees had to say, he replied, "I well know about Herod and his later and his fear of this gospel of the kingdom, but mistake not, he would much prefer that the Son of Man go up to Jerusalem to suffer and die at the hands of the chief priests. He is not anxious, having stained his hands with the blood of John, to become responsible for the death of the Son of Man. Go you and tell the fox that the Son of Man preaches in Perea today, tomorrow goes into Judea, and after a few days will be perfected in his mission on earth and prepared to ascend to the Father."
So he's pretty plain about what was going to happen, wasn't he? All right. Let's see here. Then turning to his apostles, Jesus said, "From olden time the prophet have perished in Jerusalem, and it is only befitting that the Son of Man should go up to the city of the Father's house to be offered up as the price of human bigotry and as the result of religious prejudice and spiritual blindness." That doesn't sound like he's getting sacrificed for sins, does it?
No.
Right? Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, which kills the prophets and stones the teachers of truth, how often would I gathered your children together, even as a hen gathers her own brood under her wings, but you would not let me do it. Behold, your house is about to be left to you desolate. You will many times desire to see me, but you shall not. You will then seek, but not find me. And when he had spoken, he turned to those around him and said, "Nevertheless, let us go up to Jerusalem and attend the Passover and do that which becomes us in fulfilling the will of the Father in heaven." What was the will of the Father in heaven in this point?
That he die a death on
Natural
Christ.
death. That's right. That's not
Can you go back
misunderstanding.
one?
Huh?
Can you go
Yeah.
back one? Oh,
Okay. Yeah.
nonetheless, how often would I have gathered your children together, even as hens gather her own brood under her wings, but you would not let me do it. Behold, your house is about to be left to you desolate. So he's talking to the Jews, am I correct?
Yep, he is. Yep.
You will many times desire to see me, but you shall not. Is he saying that the door to him is closed to them?
Not closed. No, he's just saying he's going away. He's not coming back. Right. All
Yeah.
right. Let's get to the
They will
last
seek to
two
find
points.
me, but
They will
not.
see that they won't find. Right. Let's go on to the next one. Rodney, I think you're up next. I want to get
Gary
this last.
hasn't, right?
Huh?
Gary hasn't read in a while.
Oh, Gary, you didn't read?
No, that's
Okay, well, will
okay.
you read this one then?
Okay. It was a confused and bewildered group of believers who this day followed Jesus into Jericho. The apostles would discern only the certain note of final triumph in Jesus' declarations regarding the kingdom. They just could not bring themselves to that place where they were willing to grasp the warnings of the impending setback. When Jesus spoke of rising on the third day, they seized upon this statement as signifying a sure triumph of the kingdom, immediately following an unpleasant preliminary skirmish with the Jewish religious leaders. The third day was a common Jewish expression signifying presently or soon thereafter. When Jesus spoke of rising, they thought he referred to the rising of the kingdom.
So this is a good explanation of why the third day is not exactly 3 days. We
That's
talked
right.
about that before. We got one more here. Rodney, would you take the last one? And then we'll
Jesus had been accepted by these believers as the Messiah, and the Jews knew little or nothing about a suffering Messiah. They did not understand that Jesus was to accomplish many things by his death, which could never have been achieved by his life. While it was the resurrection of Lazarus that nerved the apostles to enter Jerusalem, it was the memory of the transfiguration that sustained the master at this trying period of his bestowal.
Okay, so if he stayed around, he couldn't have sent what? The Spirit of Truth, right? And so that's why he didn't. We'll take out this at the blind man to Jericho next time. Let me stop the share. The checking. Okay, Pam, who's up?
Letch and then Gary's next week.
Okay, Letch, would you do a prayer for
More of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father, and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebedon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
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 All right. Thanks everyone for coming to see us. Please come
You.
see us again. We're going to get this video stuff set straightened out sooner or later. I'm not sure how I'm going to do it, but we're going to figure it out. All right. Y'all have a great one, and I will see everybody on Tuesday.
Sounds
Okay.
good.
Bye-bye.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thanks,
I'll see
everybody.
4th of July.
Happy 4th of July.
Yeah,
Yeah,
happy
happy
fourth.
fourth.
Yeah.
Thank you.